Lynch Radio.
This is the Man in Line on location.
Faster Mai, good afternoon. I wonder how much you know about the Isle of Man prison, what it's set up to do, what it does, and what it aims to do with the people who are in the Isle of Man prison. Well, it's over 20 years since I was last inside prison, and that was Victoria Road. Well, that was a very different prison to the one I'm in at the moment. So we'll find out more from the people who work here, find out what they try to do, what they do do, and what is the future for the Isle of Man prison at Jerby. Man in Line is live today behind bars. Well, the governor of Isle of Man prison is Leroy Bonnick, and I want to say, first of all, thanks for the invitation and thanks for having us here.
And welcome, Andy, and we're glad to be here to obviously give a bit of insight into what we actually do here at prison and probation. I believe this interview is an important opportunity to enhance the public understanding of the role of the Isle of Man prison and probation service, and it positively impacts on rehabilitation, education, employment, probation supervision and professional staff making and keeping our communities safe.
Okay, you've been in the job quite a long time, haven't you?
36 years at different jurisdictions.
You were 12. You were 12 when you started.
And obviously, I had the opportunity to come to the Isle of Man and as the deputy governor, one of three at the time, and then I had the opportunity to become the governor of prison and head of probation as well.
Okay, your deputy is Martin Phillips. You were at Victoria Road, weren't you, Martin?
I was at Victoria Road. Yes, I joined in 2003.
There are many differences between Victoria Road and this prison, but can you sum it up?
Lots of differences. I think when I started in Victoria Road, a lot of it was just about keeping the prison or keeping the public safe by keeping prisoners inside prison walls. We did have education, we did have healthcare, we did have lots of things that we have currently in prison, but it was on a smaller scale, really. The move up to Jerby here has put the focus more on rehabilitation and making a prisoner a better person to go back into society.
Okay, Eleanor is with us as well. What's your job, Eleanor? It's fascinating.
Hello, I am a trainee forensic psychologist, and I work both in the prison and the probation service of both sides.
Okay. Mark Williams is with us. Mark, what do you do?
So I'm the prison healthcare team leader. I work for Manx Care, and I oversee the day-to-day running of the prison healthcare department.
And next to you is Bree.
Hi, I'm Bree Tomlinson. I'm the senior matron for the Integrated Primary Care Community and Therapies Division within Manx Care. And I have a large portfolio of community services, of which prison is one of them.
Okay. And Tim's with us as well. And Tim, important job you've got.
Yeah. So my team heads up the resettlement and interventions of the prisoners. So we're responsible for trying to rehabilitate people, get them ready for release and provide them with new skills.
Okay. Have you got a full job at the moment?
Yes, it's as busy as it's ever been.
Okay, there's a man who knows all about elaborate plasterwork now, and that's John. What's your job here, John?
My job here is the building trades lecturer, so I take all the lads and the girls through construction skills. I cover just about all of them as well, from joinery, carpentry and joinery, plastering, fibrous plasterwork and plumbing and bricklaying.
Yeah, I've seen all that. And the electrics. Who does the electrics in there?
I'll be doing that, but I have a prisoner who's also a decent electrician, and I try to use prisoners to assist with me when I deliver.
It looks, and when I was around there, it looks a very productive area. It looks very busy as well.
It is. All the lads who come along to do the courses get a lot out of it. They really do.
I mean, just give me a bit more detail. When you say they got a lot out of it, didn't they think they could do anything like that before?
Well, a lot of them have gone through life missing opportunities, and this has just given them another opportunity to fear themselves and become work ready on release.
What happens to the stuff that they make, the plaster work and what have you?
I try to put it aside in one area, but as a rule, that's only the really good stuff, because lads come at different levels.
Right.
But of course, I'm short of storage.
Okay. And Sally Ann's with us as well. Sally Ann, what's your position in Isle of Man Prison?
Hello. I'm Director of Operations and Governance, and I'm based down usually in probation, but I do work as well in the prison, so I get involved in the resettlement for people coming out of prison and make sure that we have support for our probation staff.
Where is probation, by the way?
We're based at Tremode House, which is in Crogbourne, at the bottom of Tremode, hidden away. We've got a hostel there as well, which has got 11 rooms, so when people are released from prison, for high risk people who are released from prison, we have 11 rooms that we can take them into accommodation. They can wear tags, and we have hostel staff down there which staff 24/7.
You told me you were very proud of your job.
I am very proud to work here. I've been a civil servant for a long time, but I've had an interest in criminal justice for a long time, and luckily enough that I convinced Mr. Bonnick to allow me to have a job, and I do. It means something. It's a bit of a cliche, but it makes a difference in the Isle of Man what we do.
Okay, and next to you is Sarah. Sarah, what's your job?
Hello, I'm a senior probation officer in the community team, and also oversee the probation hostel. And a lot of the work that we do within the community team is working with our colleagues in the prison. We do have a probation team based in the prison, but it's about helping prisoners get ready prior to release, about assessing risk and writing reports for the courts and the parole committee. So we are very involved within the prison.
That sounds a very, very full job. And when you say assessing the risk, how do you go about assessing a risk?
Well, the assessing risk is at the heart of everything that we do, and it is a complex process. There are certain risk assessment tools that we use. It is also reliant on our professional training, on the experience and the work that we do. We liaise with our colleagues within the police and other agencies. And when we are assessing someone's risk, especially prior to release, you know, there are so many things that we look at, that we consider. And we have to think ahead. And obviously we work very closely with our prison colleagues in order that we can do that and make sure that, as I say, the risk is at the heart of everything that we do and the protection of the public.
Okay. Next to you is Pauline as well. I was going to the big question. Pauline, is it recruitment?
So I'm the senior HR advisor, so I deal with anything employment, staffing
right.
matters.
The big question is, what sort of person becomes a prison officer?
You've got to be good at communication skills, be able to de-escalate, have good teamwork and skills, because you are caring and supporting for vulnerable people.
Okay, and how long have you been in the job here?
On and off for about 2 or 3 years.
Okay, now we get help from above. The Reverend John is with us today. Are you here permanently?
So I've been working here for 3 years, and I come in 2 days a week as part of the three-person chaplaincy team.
Okay, and how do you see your role?
Part of the kind of wraparound care. You know, we've heard already how healthcare, you know, rehabilitation. So we are a part of that in providing spiritual care for people. It's not denominationally based, so we just basically offer any opportunities for care and compassion that we can.
Okay, obviously confidentiality is the main thing, but can you give us an example of some of the things that you've had to do?
So one of the things, actually one of my colleagues at the moment is sat with a prisoner who is watching a funeral live stream. So he's got a relative whose funeral is taking place, and my colleague Kev is sat with him, so they're not on their own. We accompany people, you know, if prisoners, like everybody else, get bad news, sadly, at times. So we're there to offer support and encouragement and affirmation, really. For us, it's religiously based, but we just want to show some care and love, really.
And you mentioned prisoners are human beings,
mm-hmm.
and they obviously have feelings. Some of them know the mistakes that they've made and the impact it's had on other people. So how does your council help?
I mean, I think that can be an opportunity. One of the things, because I'm the Catholic chaplain, we have the Sacrament of Reconciliation, and I've had opportunities where people have been genuinely sorry for what they have done and want an opportunity to turn the page and to leave that behind. So that's something that we can do, and we can chat to people. We are there for them, because there's a chaplaincy presence in the prison every day. We are around, we are part of the fabric of life, we build relationships with staff and with residents.
Okay, back to the Governor, Leroy Bonnick, and obviously, where does the victim of crime sit in all this?
As always, that's at the, you know, the forefront of what we're doing. I mean, Sarah's just talked about risk, and we always have to take that into consideration once these individuals are integrated back into the community. So we have a strong link with victim support in terms of that. So we do consider that in terms of their release dates, yeah, and everything else, and we do bear that in mind.
Because obviously on the Isle of Man, it's impossible to be anonymous.
Yeah. And certainly, you know, from my experience, you know, working in the UK system, there was an opportunity for the individual to be start a fresh somewhere else from where the crime took place, which obviously that does have a bearing on the victim then, that they may never come across, you know, the perpetrator that probably changed their life. But here on a small island, the opportunity of running into somebody in Strand Street while you're shopping is high. So, you know, that is part and parcel of what we do in terms of our rehabilitation and the work that the probation and the resettlement team do.
In the 30-odd years that you've been doing this, as you say, times have changed, and the job has become a lot more human based, hasn't it?
Yeah.
In actually looking at the prisoner themselves and what can be done with that sort of prisoner. I mean, as somebody who started 30 odd years ago, how did you feel about that change at the time?
You're always difficult to do change. I think we all have that in our system somewhere. Why change? It's not broken. But certainly in terms of society and what we're trying to produce in terms of these individuals being reintegrated back in society, I think some of the changes that have been introduced are very welcome and were needed. And whilst prison is always a fundamental for security, public protection, and as I've said, and victims, I'm keen that listeners gain a greater appreciation of the work that every day we're trying to do here in terms of rehabilitation.
Okay, overall, how do you think the Isle of Man prison's doing?
I can only gauge it in terms of what I've done over my time, and I think we're extremely in a good place, but there is always room for improvement in terms of rehabilitation, reoffending, and all those that are part and parcel of a prison life. But, you know, with the team that I've got around me, and you've heard from both of them, all of them briefly, you know, we're striving to always do better and make, you know, the Isle of Man a safer place as it already is in terms of other countries, okay, or areas.
Okay. Eleanor, just, and again, it's a what psychologist? It's
a forensic psychologist.
Forensic psychologist.
Yeah, and training at the moment.
Did you train on the island for that?
Yeah, so I'm doing it. So part of the training, so you do, it's about 7 or 8 years in total. It's quite a long period of time. You have to do a psychology degree, then a master's in forensic psychology. And then at the moment, I've picked the registration route. So registration with the governing body, the HCPC. And that's about a 3 to 5 year postgraduate diploma, which I do distanced with Cardiff Met University. So I work here full time. And then I have certain modules that I have to achieve to gain the qualification, the registration.
Okay. So on a day-to-day basis, what does your job entail?
That's a great question. A lot, and it's very varied. So I suppose to give you a bit of an overview, forensic psychology is using psychological knowledge to help us best understand behaviour, risk, the person within criminal justice settings, forensic settings, with the aim of supporting safe outcomes and meaningful change. So our role within both prison and probation service it's all about supporting rehabilitation, reducing the risk, and protecting the public. And it's very varied, our role. So we do psychological and risk assessments, therapeutic work, structured programs, sentence and risk management planning, support for staff through consultation, and also through trauma-informed training. And at the heart of our work, we
trauma-informed
do...
Trauma-informed training,
yeah,
what's
trauma-informed
that?
Training. So trauma-informed training, it helps us to Well, so basically trauma-informed training is something that we do. It's probably less visible to the general public. And it's take place, we do it within the prison. And it's a two-day training event. And it's basically acknowledging that the people we work with in prison are more likely to have experienced trauma than not. And it acknowledges the presence of trauma symptoms and the part that trauma plays in someone's life.
You look like you love your job.
I love my job. I'm really passionate about my job, yeah.
My word. And when does your qualification period end?
Well, hopefully I'll sign off in April, May next year and then get my results July, August.
Fingers crossed. Let us know how you do. Mark, just tell us briefly then on a day-to-day basis what your job entails.
So on a day-to-day basis, healthcare do a variety of different things. So our role in healthcare, prison healthcare, is to provide equivalents of care. So what I mean by that is we ensure that patients get the same care that they would in the community. So this is by giving them access to GPs, advanced practitioners. And we also have in-reach services coming in, such as drug and alcohol, motivate, community wellbeing, dentist and psychiatrist. So we have a big team under me and we do our best to care for the patients.
Do you like your job?
I love my job, yeah.
What particularly do you like about it?
I like trying to make a difference, trying to improve the healthcare in the Alban prison. I come from a prison in the UK, so I've tried to use my experience there and have a positive impact in prison healthcare here.
Okay. And Bree, so what part do you play in this procedure?
Yeah, so I have, as I said earlier, a portfolio of services, of which the prison is one. So I oversee some of the operational delivery of the healthcare in the prison and making sure that the right person is seeing that patient at the right time. So whether that's, like Mark said, a GP, a registered nurse, mental health services, our pharmacy support team, just to ensure that patient outcomes are as good as they can be.
Okay. You'll know, Bree, because people will have said it to you, why should people inside prison get that sort of treatment? There are lots of people who just say, lock them up and forget them.
Yeah, because we need to look at the person as a whole person and that we need to meet their needs wherever they are living at that time. So they are very much entitled to the equivalence of care, that exact same care at the good standard that you would get.
How long have you been coming to the prison?
I actually only took up my senior matron role in December last year. So I'm very much on that learning trajectory and I've got a great team to guide me.
What did you think when you got the job of coming to the prison?
I had to take a couple of deep breaths before I came in that first day and it took me a little bit of time to be brave enough to go through my key training and get keys and feel comfortable in the environment. But you very, very much do now. And again, it's about the people around you. They support you and guide you. And it makes it feel like you're part of the small healthcare team, but the wider prison team as well.
How did you cross that bridge? How did you, one day, did you suddenly think, Bree, this is going to be fine?
Yeah, being brave and taking...
Did you think you could do it?
I was nervous, but I like a challenge. That's why I do the job that I do. And yeah, it turned out okay. I feel comfortable in the environment now. And you have to be aware all the time. And it's about those risk assessments and using your judgment, but people don't let you misstep.
Okay. Right. We'll be back in just a few moments' time. We're live at the Isle of Man Prison in Jerby on Man in Line today.
Welcome to the Millichaps of Ramsey Summer Sale, where you'll find fabulous reductions throughout the store, from beds and flooring to sofas, cane furniture and accessories, rugs, pictures, mirrors and even wallpapers. Plus, the friendly Millichaps team are here as always with a warm welcome and expert help and advice when needed. Don't miss the Millichaps of Ramsey Summer Sale, now on.
Creating a home where you'll love to be. Millichaps of Ramsey.
Ramsey Care Products, proudly part of the community at St Paul's Square in the north of the island, supplying affordable, quality disability and mobility products. Call 627 177. Ramsey Care Products, affordable mobility solutions for you.
Direct cremation is just that, an affordable and simple cremation without all the costs associated with a funeral service. Find out more by visiting directcremation.im or phone Direct Cremations on 478 422.
At Bond Fabrics, we're not just a fabric shop. As well as curtains and upholstery and dress and costume fabrics, we've knitting and crocheting wools, made-to-measure curtain and blind service, plus poles and tracks. Visit Strand Street, Douglas, call 611856 or see bondfabrics.im.
Bolton's for electricals. Great service, great price and stock to go.
For everything electrical for your home, it has to be Walton's. At Walton's Electrical, we have a huge stock of ready-to-go items at incredible prices. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 till 5, on the Isle of Man Business Park, Braddon. Find us online at waltons.im and follow us on Facebook for our latest offers.
Walton's for electricals. Great service, great price and stock to go.
SMS Trading. New and second-hand furniture from flat pack to fully built. See our range at 3 St Paul Square, Ramsey. All-island delivery and man-in-a-van service available. Call SMS Trading on 315151 or find SMS Trading on Facebook.
This evening at 6:30, you can find out some of what's happening in the island's rich cultural life in Shachley.
That evening has got an optional nautical fancy dress. So if you fancy getting down to Peel Charity Shop, you can pick up something sea-themed.
It was a real community success, and we had a lot of people saying if they don't play an instrument or speak the language, it was their way of supporting the culture.
That's this evening at 6:30 in Shachley.
This is the Man in Line on location.
And today, I'm proud to say, we're at the Isle of Man Prison on the invitation of the Governor Leroy Bonnick and the Deputy Governor Martin Phillips. And Sarah from the Probation Service, you wanted to say something, Sarah.
Well, I think the point that, you know, I would like to make today is that the people that we work with, whether that be prisoners or the people that we supervise in the community, are all part of our community. You know, we're not talking about a separate group of people. They are members of our community. They are, can be our neighbours. They can be relatives. They can be people we know. And it's important that as part of the rehabilitation of the people that we work with, that we work with people to support them towards successful rehabilitation and to go back within the community, and also feel for them to feel a part of the community. Because what research has shown time and time again, that for example, if people coming out of prison or if, you know, on probation service, if they have a job, if they have a home, they're more invested in our community. That in itself will reduce the risk of further offending. So it is important then, when we're talking about people within the criminal justice system, that we do always remember that, you know, we are all part of one community.
And what would you say to people who have a misconception about that?
I think that there are a lot of misconceptions, and I think we're a small community here on the island, and I know that, you know, sometimes seeing social media, the quite strong views about, say, for example, the prison or people who've committed offences. However, you know, there is a lot of work going on within the prison, within the probation service, to ensure that, you know, the heart of what we do is the protection of the public, but also that people can go back into the community and be a useful member of society, can get employment, you know, they pay the taxes. We're not talking about a different group of people.
Yeah. Okay. Mike's joined us as well. Mike, what's your job here?
Good afternoon. I'm the prison trainer manager, so I oversee the recruitment processes for new staff and the training of them and the existing staff that we have at the minute.
How long does training take?
The initial training is now a 12-week course. 2 weeks of that is your control and restraint training, and the rest of it is all the theory and practical side that goes into being a prison officer.
Theory? What do you need to know all the acts of Tim Wald and everything?
No, as in the things that we do to keep the place secure, right, to make sure that we are abiding by our rules, the policies and procedures that we have in the prison.
You're knee-deep in procedure and rules, aren't you?
I'd say that comes from more above me, but it's my job to make sure the new staff understand what we're doing.
Right. And how long have you been in the prison service?
8 years today, I think it is, actually.
Happy birthday.
Trainer manager since officially since November.
Okay. And do you like your job?
I do. And for me, I'm in a very different job than I started. I was an officer for 3.5 years. Then I got promoted to senior officer. Now, in the last couple of years, I found myself doing trainer manager role, which is not something I ever thought I'd be doing or somewhere I saw myself. But there's always opportunities here. There's different things you can do, and it's good to take them when they come up.
Okay. And how would you, if somebody was considering a career in the prison service, what would you say to them?
I'd say it's something you have to go for. If something you consider, I'd go for it. I don't think anyone ever wakes up thinking I'm going to be a prison officer, unless perhaps it runs in your family, something like that. A lot of people are here because it's a job that maybe crops up or something. They come across, they talk to somebody, and then they put in the application and go through the process. I think if you're good with people, if you've got a little bit of common sense, but you've got a balanced approach to life, and the outlook that we're looking for now is very different to previous prison officers. If you've got a little bit of that, then it's something to definitely consider putting in for.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go to Tim now, because we've had a couple of questions in, and that's regarding work. And do any of the prisoners, while they're here, do any work? And how do you find them jobs outside?
Yep. So there's an expectation that every prisoner that's been convicted works. That starts off...
Every
prisoner, yeah. So that starts off with jobs in the prison. So they might be cleaning the wing that they live on. And from there, we look for them to progress through their sentence. So getting more responsibilities within the prison. So, for example, they might work their way up to the kitchens, cooking the food for all the meals that are served here every day. And then later on in their sentence, we look at trying to get them more opportunities. So we have 2 prisoner work parties that are supervised and go out into the community. And they will assist. We do a lot of work with local charities, helping them, local sports clubs, and we've done some work with some of the commissioners as well. And then from there, potentially, if someone is able to prove themselves on that, we then look at getting people out on licence. So we have prisoners who are on long sentences, who when they get to their last 12 months, as long as they're deemed as a kind of low risk to go out, we will let them out of the door in the morning. They will go out to a normal full-time job in the community, contribute to society, come back at the end of the day, back to the prison at a set time. And that is quite a controlled process. There's a lot of rules that they have to abide to, but it's a really useful tool for us for measuring risk, because we can check people's compliance.
Do they get paid?
So, yeah, people do. So if you're working within the prison, prisoners get a very small wage each week paid by the prison for doing their work.
How much is that?
It ranges from £9 up to potentially £30 for some of the most trusted jobs within the prison. And then once people get out onto licence working in the community, they can potentially earn a full-time wage with an employer. We do have some people will go out and do that work voluntarily, because it's certainly in their interest to do that, particularly if they're a parole sentence prisoner. But for most of them, they are out with proper employers contributing to a workplace.
Okay. And do you oversee all of that?
Yes. So my team consists of a senior officer who kind of line manages all of those staff. We have resettlement and interventions officers. And then also I've got John and Gaynor working in the skills centre. And they really feed into the work party and the outside work, because they're providing the skills so that when people are ready for that opportunity to go out to work, we've taught them everything that they need to be able to do those jobs.
Will there be more? Is the amount of people who are going into work, is that more? Is it getting bigger?
It is getting bigger. So we've now got a second work party. We only had one originally when I started in this role. We now have 2 work parties. So that's 2 groups of 5 going out. And the number of people going out on licence has definitely increased as well. And that's something that we're keen to, where it's safe and appropriate to do, to keep developing that.
Okay. John, what's the most popular part of your workshop in the buildings trades? What do people like doing? Bricky or plumbing, or what is it?
They like everything, to be honest with you. Honestly, whatever I deliver to them, they all get something out of it. But more to what you mentioned before about resources, what I have the opportunity to do here at the moment is, while I'm developing the courses, I get in touch with employers, and I also get potential employers, and I also get in touch with them for manufacturers for materials. So the likes of, and it's not just the Isle of Man, I get in touch with the UK. So the likes of the UK have delivered, Michelmersh delivered 10,000 bricks, which enabled me to go ahead and run bricklaying courses.
Right.
For nothing. For nothing. The steam packer company assists with me getting the bricks over here for free. And then I also have the likes of Refina, a plastering tool company, who donated tools for me for free. And then across over here on the island, which is a fantastic response, the likes of Anke have donated so much materials to me that I could run the plumbing now. And then QPAS Calo is another company I'm in talks with. And I'm going to their trade fair today, which is going to allow me now to get in touch with more online, on island trainers.
Confidentiality comes first, but can you just tell us a few of your success stories? Brickies, plumbers, electricians?
It's still early doors, yeah. The centre only got officially opened 4 months ago. And of course, lads are still in here doing their prison time. Right. But hopefully I'm going to build on that. And as time goes on, the ties I'm getting within the community, that we can start delivering prisoners to become plasterers, joiners, carpenters.
Okay, I want to come to the... let me get this right. Are you a father or a reverend?
I'm a father.
You're a father.
Not actually a literal father.
No, but...
I have the title, but father. No children.
I want to talk to you about redemptive goodwill.
Yeah.
One of the basic tenets of Christianity, mm-hmm. redemptive goodwill.
Yeah.
How does that fit into prison?
Because I was thinking about this before travelling today. And, you know, Jesus said, whatever you do for the least of my brothers and sisters, you do for me. So that's our motivation. But also, we see in people an opportunity, because I think a lot of what we've been talking about here is about giving people an opportunity. And that's obviously something that Christians, we're invested in. We believe in forgiveness. And I think, you know, what was said before about a trauma-informed approach is to understanding where people have come from and why they have ended up where they are, and to give them an opportunity to make a new start. And that involves lots of different things. People in here have time to think, you know, people are interested more in religion, things that maybe in everyday life, because life, the pace of life is so fast, people have time to think and they are interested.
Well, they will become more reflective when they're inside prison.
Yeah.
Can you spot that in people? Can you spot another side?
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, say, for example, I'm a Catholic. Usually we would say 10% of Catholics go to Mass, but our attendance here usually at the Saturday service is probably 20% of the prison population. So, you know, we are...
There's no wine, is there? No wine?
Partly biscuits, I'm going to be honest, but also because people, I think, they realise the fundamental questions that are so easy to forget about in everyday life become a sharp reality in here, because people have time to think, and they think, you know, do I want this to be a turning point in my life, and how am I going to do that about? And religion often offers people the opportunity of forgiveness and a new start.
Okay, Leroy?
Just to elaborate on what Johnny's saying, and most of the team here, and I always say to my team, it's about giving these people hope and belief. And, you know, hope is a good thing. You know, John talks about his workshop. I've been across there, and some of them never achieved anything, and I hand out a certificate, and it's probably the first achievement some of these people have actually done in their lives. So it is giving them hope and belief that they can be better people and go back into the community and do something differently that actually led them to being in here in the first place.
Okay, Martin, Deputy Governor.
Andy, just a slight change of subject. It's going back to what Tim was talking about. And again, I do tune into your show, and it's just busting one of the myths that comes up quite often. It's about the footpaths and why prisoners aren't clearing the footpaths.
Right.
Why are prisoners not cutting hedges? And as Tim has said, we've probably got more work out in the community to do than we've got prisoners to do that. The difficulty is the logistics of getting prisoners out to do these jobs. So, for example, to do the footpath jobs, we need the welfare van. You know, the prisoners can't be expected to do a whole job the day without access to toilets, access to somewhere to sit down and have those breaks. So we do have a van, but that's fully employed at the moment. And again, likewise with the van, that'll take a prison officer around. So again, that will take a prisoner out of the day-to-day running. So the ideal world, we would like to have 10 vans leaving this prison estate on a daily basis, taking prisoners whose day otherwise is spent on A-Wing, pent up with their frustrations. They could be out in the community doing that, but again, our budgets are focused elsewhere.
Okay, and so budgets, that's come up several times. So more money would mean more prisoners working out in the community?
It's very difficult to say that. You know, we are funded well, but it's prioritising money. And again, a lot of our focus at the moment is with the population that we have, the increased population that we have. And again, we're heavily investing with, as John said, with some of the rehabilitation bits. So everything takes funding. It's just prioritising that funding at times.
Okay, Eleanor.
Leroy.
Oh, no, Leroy.
It was just me. And it's not a case of we've opened up the floodgates and every prisoner is going to be out in the community. Yeah. Our team talked about it. Sarah did. It's all about risk assessments and the suitability to be in the community. But it's also, as Tim alluded to, is a bit of trust and testing people for their reintegration back into the community.
Right. And Father John?
Those at home listening to this may not have seen, but when Leroy mentioned hope, everyone in the room, their head nodded, because that is what we are about here. Because it's in everyone's interest to think that people don't do these things again. You know, it's in society's interest. And I think that's what everybody in here is motivated to do, to make sure that there isn't a repeat of the behaviour.
Well, it's cheaper for society.
Exactly.
If everybody stays on the right side of the law,
exactly,
then the criminal justice system, which costs the state an awful lot of money,
yes,
wouldn't be troubled.
Exactly, and that money is wasted if we don't make efforts at rehabilitation.
Okay, right, we'll be back in just a few moments' time, live from the Isle of Man prison.
One architectural design company has particular expertise in achieving planning approval for a wide variety of projects, from landmark buildings to spectacular homes. Talk to the experts at Ellis Brown and get your project off the ground. For excellence in design, search Ellis Brown.
1986.
At Manx Glass and Glazing, we're celebrating our 40th anniversary. That's right. Manx Glass and Glazing have been delivering quality and stylish aluminium and UPVC windows and doors to the island since 1986. And we've spent four decades committed to developing our community, including investing in future generations through our apprenticeship scheme. Visit our showroom on Snugborough Trading Estate and see why we've been helping the island for 40 years. Trust Manx Glass and Glazing. Quality and style since 1986.
At Ramsey Garden Centre, enjoy exclusive savings and get inspiration for your home or garden. And as stock arrives every week, drop in or follow our Facebook page. Grow smarter, greener, season after season with Ramsey Garden Centre.
You get more than you think, but all that you need when you
shop local with EVF.
Because your local EVF filling station isn't just a place for fuel, it's where you can get delicious food to go. Chilled drinks, wines and beers, barbecue and summer essentials, from ice creams to surfboards, plus a great range of local products. Ellen Van In Fuels. Fill up, fuel up and get all you need to go. Open till late.
Shop local with EVF.
The exclusive Karcher store is open with thousands of products, accessories and parts in stock. For Karcher sales and service, Hersham Electrical, Shipyard Industrial Estate, Ramsey.
This is the Man in Line on location.
Live today at the Isle of Man prison in Jerby, and Sarah's with us again. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Just to really follow on from, you know, the discussions that we're having, but the ethos of the probation service is that we feel strongly that people have the capacity to change, and the work that we do within the prison and the community is all about supporting that positive change. And success is not measured by dramatic stories, but sometimes by small achievements, such as someone finding employment or going out of the prison to work during the day, stable accommodation, remaining free from drugs, or not committing further offences. And that, in essence, is the work that we do. We're not looking for the big dramatic stories. We're chipping away, working with people to see these changes, which are so important for lasting change. And obviously all of that has a huge and positive impact on all of us within the community.
Yeah, it's, and again, I talked earlier on about misconceptions of what you do, Sarah. And obviously it's a non-tangible outcome.
Yes,
what you have
sometimes
is not, and people can't be measured in terms of widgets or what have you. So how would you, what would you say to people who have got the misconception, don't quite understand what you do, or the reason for what you do?
Well, the reason for what we do for all of us who are in the room today is as you know, as I've said, in terms of that we do believe that we can work with people and move towards positive change. And throughout my career within the probation service, you know, I've worked with hundreds of people who, you know, who move on with their lives, who go on, you know, they get go back into employment or stable relationship. People who've done very well. You know, I passed people in Strand Street on a Saturday who I've worked with previously, who I know now their life is very different, right. And they're very self. And they've not offended again, and sometimes, you know, it's those stories that is not easy to quantify, but we see all the time.
How does that make you feel when you see somebody in Parliament Street or Strand Street that you've worked with?
Well, it's you know, it's really why we do what we do, and you know, I've always believed it's a privilege to do this job, and you know, it's and to see people move forward, and also, you know, more importantly, to know that by reducing reoffending within our communities, there isn't, that victim isn't going to be impacted again. You know, there may not be further victims from that person.
Okay. Eleanor?
I just wanted to add to Sarah's point. So rehabilitation is very multifaceted. Like she said, there's so many different elements to it. And I suppose where forensic psychology comes in, one element that we do is we deliver a range of different trauma-informed psychological therapeutic interventions. Now, these help to aim to help people better understand themselves, develop coping strategies, address harmful or problematic behaviours, and reduce their risk of reoffending. That is the end goal.
Leroy was saying that some prisoners in here won't have had much formal education, won't have been through those processes. Mm-hmm. How do you get to somebody who hasn't been through an academic background and doesn't quite know how to cope?
I suppose it's meeting the person initially. So I think we spoke a little bit about successes before, and I think one of the major successes is just the person choosing to come and meet with you. That we need to work with people who are motivated to change. That's the starting point, really. Getting people just to meet with us, to have a chat, to get into a point where they can be vulnerable, open up. I mean, prison's a very difficult place to be vulnerable. You constantly have to put on that front. So for them to come into a group of other men or women and be vulnerable, share that how they feel, how they cope with emotions. Like you say, some of the people we work with may not have been through education and may not know how to express what the emotions are, how they feel, and it's just sort of helping people to understand that. That's the bottom line of our intervention work, is understanding emotions, how to then manage and cope with those emotions.
Okay, Tim?
Yeah, just to add there, with regards to people's education, it shouldn't be underestimated the range of people that we get here. So we have some people who have had very high-flying careers who come here and are well-educated. There are people here who, when they arrive with us, cannot read and write. And that's
at what age?
At any age. We have grown men and women that we have to start from scratch almost at times. And you know, that's where we see those different hats that prison officers and other staff have to wear. So you know, I've got prison officers on my team who. We do a really nice scheme called Storybook Dads and Storybook Mums, where prisoners can read a children's bedtime story and get it put on CD and send out to their children. Some people can do that, great, but there are some people that we have to sit down with them and we have to go through line by line on this recording, similar to how we're doing now here, with a microphone and guide them through that. And for people who've been in that position before, those little victories in prison with these kind of learning experiences, it's the first time that they've had that. And that is really great to see.
Okay. A couple of questions. First of all, Leroy, we've a question. When we walked here, my colleague said there's a sign there that says drug dogs. Do you have drug dogs here all the time?
Yes, we have drug dogs. We have two passive and two active dogs that are yeah, and help obviously in terms of any illicit stuff that, you know, may try to venture into the prison.
Right,
and that's all part and parcel of prison life.
And they patrol within the prison as well.
They do, but they can search visitors, staff, prisoners at any time.
Right. And how do you get alerted to that transgression, shall we say?
I mean, without breaking confidentiality and putting stuff out there in the public domain. But obviously, you know, it's like any, it's just like a little village. People talk and, you know, we, you know, information is then freed up and we can act on that or whatever.
Good. It was Ella, who wanted to talk then, was it?
I was just adding to Tim's point that we were talking about the responsivity needs of the people that we work with. So whether it's education or not, we'd meet with them and assess their responsivity needs and then adapt all of our practice to each individual person.
I just want to go to Pauline from as far as recruitment's concerned. Pauline, one thing we noticed when we came around here a few weeks ago is the, and again, forgive me because I'm new to this, female prison warders.
Yes.
Female or prison officers, shall we say.
So we've got quite a few female prison officers, and they're no different to males. It's equal. They're very good at their job.
Okay. Leroy was saying that when he started, there were very few female prison officers.
Yeah.
So what's changed, and what sort of woman wants to become a prison officer?
I think culture. I think the times have changed. Gone are the days when, you know, size matters. So, anyone could be a common prison officer.
Okay. Back to Leroy on that, because you've got a word to say about women prison officers. I shouldn't say warders, should I?
No, it's prison officers.
Right, okay.
And as you can see around us as part of our, senior management team, or, you know, there's females in every department or different grades. And, you know, that's society as we see it.
Right.
The majority of the senior management team are females, which tells you, you know, where we are in society.
Right.
And it would be ill of me as, you know, the head of prison and probation to sit here today and not mention, you know, the prison officers on the ground floor who do, you know, make the world tick in terms of a prison life.
We've done a very sketchy pen portrait of that, but how many prison officers do you employ here?
We employ 42 officers, but that has gone up by another 6 in terms of the population pressure, in terms of that, to obviously fulfil our role and being able to unlock each day.
And how often do they get to see the boss?
I go around most days between myself and Martin, and we patrol. I'm actually the duty governor today, so I'll go around most areas and see them.
Okay, was it Tim?
Yeah, just going back to that kind of split of different types of people who are prison officers, I think it's really important from our perspective that we don't want all of our officers to be the same kind of person. So we do. We have men, we have women, we have different ages. I think quite often what we see is that prison officers fill the gap almost of family members for people. A lot of people, either they're obviously away from their family or they've potentially never had that support. I think every person that works here brings something individual to the table. Some people are very good at handing out instruction and ensuring that discipline's kept to. Other people are far better at being providing that care and support, and I think we all work together to provide that package.
Okay, Deputy Governor Martin.
I think with regards to female officers, it's important to remember we have female prisoners within the Isle of Man prison here. We are unique compared to lots of UK prisoners, where we house every prisoner under one roof, from lifers, we have protected prisoners, we have male, females, convicted and remand. So we're similar to the other Crown dependencies, Jersey and Guernsey, where they will hold all the same prisoners. So again, the female aspect has a calming effect on the male wings, and likewise some of the males on the female wing again has that calming effect for the female prisoners.
And how much is that? Were there many female officers at Victoria Road?
I can't remember exactly how many. There was a handful, yes, but there was definitely female prison officers when I joined, yes.
Yeah. Just interesting, and the listeners will be interested to know, again, the difference. When you started as a... What year did you start without giving your age away?
2003.
So 23-odd years ago. You're obviously still in the job, so you quite like it. And again, how would you sum up what has changed?
It's a very different service to when I joined. I think initially, back in 2003, a lot of the focus was on ex-service people, bouncers, that kind of person we're looking for the job specification, because most of the job was around discipline, making sure we just kept a disciplined prison and kept the community safe. But now we're all, as we've all discussed here, it's about rehabilitation. It's making the prisoners better people to go back into our community. So that's been a big change over the years, absolutely.
In September, we got an election, and prisoners here can vote. Is that true?
It is true, yes. As we've talked about here, we are still part of the community. The prison itself is a little community. We've got representatives from every department here. So yes, they have every rights that they do. The only issue they have got here is they've lost their liberty.
So how do they vote? Is it postal or proxy? Or
it's usually a postal vote, yes. Yep.
Okay. And do you often get MHKs or politicians visiting? Is a prisoner, by the way, allowed to have their MHK for a pastoral visit or anything like that?
Yes, we do. Quite often we get some of the local MHKs come in to see their constituents, again, because they may want to raise issues that they've had because of being in custody, and that will come through forms of complaint. So, yes, their MHKs will come in to represent them whilst they're in here.
Do you ever get any MHKs canvassing in the prison? They're not allowed to do that, are they?
We haven't as yet, but we are open to. We have what we call a prisons council. So there's a representative from each wing of a prisoner that will come in, and we have had MHKs that have sat in front of that council where prisoners can present questions to MHKs if needs be. Yes.
Wow. Well, we're coming up to the end of our broadcast here, live from the Isle of Man prison. Leroy Bonnick, the prison governor. If there's one misconception that you would like to quash about the Isle of Man prison, what would you like to say?
Well, the one that's always in the news that always does get my heckles up is about the Jervy Hilton in terms of what we do.
I didn't mention that because I wanted to get out.
So in terms of it is about decency, and all the team you've heard from today talks about that, and certainly somebody coming into prison should be treated with that respect. We're here to rehabilitate them. Martin's alluded to the fact that it's their liberty that's taken away, but they are entitled to be treated as a human being. Even more so here, I would say, on the island, because they're probably related to somebody probably listening today, and they would expect that. And certainly, you know, I get complaints where they feel individuals aren't being treated appropriately, you know, and have to put people right in terms of what we're trying to do, what we do and everything else. And why would you have, you know, somebody come into squalor or whatever? That's not what we're about. And certainly, you know, it is about... When I started, you know, prisons were still slopping out.
Put it this way, Jervy smells a lot better than Victoria Road did. Four to a cell slopping out.
There you go. And therefore, you can walk around now, it's fresh, you know, there's a lot of light and everything else. So it's not about the Jervy Hilton. And people talk about, you know, what prisoners get, they've got Xboxes and everything else. Tim has alluded to, you know, we have prisoners working in the kitchen. Some of them work 6 or 7 days a week, earn you know, a wage, and they spend that like you and I go out to Tesco or the co-op.
Okay. Briefly, we're nearly out of time, but in terms of expansion at the prison, we've heard about a planning application. What's going to happen here?
I mean, there are lots of variants on the table of how we can increase the population. It is a bigger issue about the criminal justice and people coming to prison. We're not saying they shouldn't, but we need to look at all elements of that. And obviously, you know, the Department of Home Affairs have been very supportive in terms of that, in trying to expand the prison and what we're doing for the rising population. And it is about future-proofing the prison in terms of that. We've unlocked 140 prisons today, and, you know, that can change at a moment's notice in terms of, you know, what's happening in the community. So we are putting together a business case of what, and there are lots of options on the table. The only option that isn't that we don't do anything. So we need to change and look how we can future-proof that. Okay. Martin has alluded to the fact that we are part of the community, where that, you know, like a school, hospital and everything else.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks to Leroy Bonnick, the governor's invited us, and Martin Phillips, the deputy governor. Thanks to Father John. Thanks also to Eleanor and Pauline and Sarah and Sally Ann and Mark and Mike and Bree and Tim and John. I hope you've found something today that's enlightened you. Hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say thanks to Matty, our engineer, and to Chris on the microphone. I've been Andy Wint today, live at the Isle of Man prison. WINT